Today's episode is brought to you in part by ExtraHop. Think analytics, folks. ExtraHop is the enterprise cyber analytics company delivering performance and security from the inside out. More on ExtraHop later in the show, but if you just can't wait, visit extrahop.com/packetpushers to find out more.
It's been about a year since the Packet Pushers launched Ignition, our membership site for professional development. Our goal was to use Ignition as a home for content that went beyond podcasts, things like video, instructional courses, white papers, ebooks, that kind of thing. Another goal for Ignition was to create content outside the sponsorship model. And yes, sponsorship has been very good to the Packet Pushers, and we're going to continue partnering with vendors on sponsored shows. But we also wanted a place where we could develop material that didn't depend on sponsors for creation or support. That's why we chose a subscription model for Ignition. The idea is go directly to the audience, i.e. you, and say, here's what we're doing, and if you find it valuable, become a subscriber. Okay, so we're a year in, and we've learned a few things about running a subscription site. Ethan, I won't say that Ignition has been a failure, and I think it's also fair to say that Ignition hasn't been a roaring success. It's kind of been meh, you know, and meh isn't what we want. So in imitation of a Silicon Valley startup, a redo is in order. Today's podcast is the official relaunch of Ignition. We're going to talk about changes we've made to the site's design, a new subscription scheme, some new content, and what we plan to do going forward. And we've got a sneak preview of a brand new course that's going to be on Ignition by the one and only Ethan Banks. It's going to be available for Ignition subscribers. So strap in as we kick Ignition into a higher gear and see where it takes us. All right, so just for folks who maybe aren't aware of Ignition, Ethan, what is it?
Ignition.packetpushers.net. This is a membership site. When in its original conception, we had built a free tier and a premium tier. The premium tier is $99 a year and gave you access to more premium content. And the idea was, hey, people with the free subscription, you look and see the things that are there that you might could get to as a premium subscriber, and you'll click through and then upgrade. And none of you do that. What those of you that are listening, what has happened and what we've discovered is that, you know, $99 a year is not a big request. For most of you, a few of you have said that you're struggling financially and $99 a year is kind of a lot, but most of you are okay with that. It's not a big decision point as far as the pricing goes. But you're looking for specific content, and what we've noticed is there are many of you that are signing up because we've published some bit of content out there on Ignition that, you know, that you like. And so, you know, what is Ignition was your question, Drew, and what it's maybe less of a question of what it, you know, is versus what it's going to be going forward, you know, the changes that we're beginning to put in place. You know, the answer to that being, we're dropping the free tier. That doesn't really make a lot of sense, and we just want Ignition to be very simple and straightforward. This is a site that you can go, support the Packet Pushers, because you've gotten a lot of value from us going all the way back to 2010 or whenever you joined this crazy party. And you want to give back to us. You know, $99 a year gives you an opportunity to give back to us and gives you premium content. And the only content that's going to be on Ignition going forward is premium content. Therefore, you sign up, you do the $99 a year thing, you get access to Ignition, and all of the content that's in there is premium. There, now it's easy. Now it's really straightforward. Right.
One decision, no confusion. You have to pay to get on. So for everybody who's a free subscription member, we appreciate you signing up for the free tier, but that's going away. So if you want to be part of Ignition, it is going to be $99 going forward.
Yeah, and all the content that was free there, like you had access to Human Infrastructure Magazine, and there was a few free articles and videos like the Virtual Design Clinic, that's all going to be available somewhere else. So it's not like any of that content's going away. We're just going to move it. So, for example,
and it'll still be free. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's still going to be free. So, Virtual Design Clinic, if you haven't been paying attention to YouTube, we have a YouTube channel, youtube.com/packetpushersnetwork, and we've been sending out all of the Virtual Design Clinic videos. We actually went all the way back to VDC1, and they're slowly but surely leaking out there. So by the end of August 2019, they should all have finally published to YouTube. So all the Virtual Design Clinic videos there, that's something that was on Ignition that we're putting on YouTube instead. Seems like what everybody wanted anyway. It's like, meh, you guys had an event. I want it free on YouTube. Meh. You know, we heard a lot of people say that. So it's like, yeah, okay, fair enough. And you know, another example is Human Infrastructure Magazine. That's our weekly newsletter. We had made Human Infrastructure Magazine, a perk of Ignition. That is, you'd log into Ignition and the or sign up for Ignition, and one of the things you would get is Human Infrastructure Magazine sent to your inbox. We're breaking that into its own thing. This is not going to be tied to Ignition anymore. If you want to get the newsletter, there's going to be a sign-up form on packetpushers.net. By the time you're listening to this, it should probably already be there. The archives will be there for the old newsletter. Episodes, if you want to go back and read through those, they'll all be there. It's not an episode, whatever. It's a PDF, right? Right.
Different medium, man. Get your head around it.
That's right. So him, we're breaking apart just to be its own thing, you know, its own property that you don't have to sign up for Ignition or whatever to get access to.
I think Human Infrastructure will also be free.
Absolutely. It will also be free. And we think that's going to make it more straightforward of, you know, how to interact with us. You know, you want the newsletter? Here, there'll be an obvious form on packetpushers.net to sign up for the newsletter. You want to go to Ignition? That's the membership site. That's the premium thing. You go over there and sign up for the $99 a year and get access to all the premium stuff. Going back to Ignition, Drew, what we've done in response to what some of you have asked us for, you've said, hey, I want to be able to find content more easily. I want to be able to discover what's out there. Or if you were a premium member when we still had a free tier, you were saying, I want to know what the new premium content is. Great. So we obviously the one thing we're doing here is making it all premium content anyway. But we've also invested in a plugin that allows us to list content categorically and gives you the ability to see what the new articles are that are there very easily, what the new white papers are that have been published, what the new courses are that have been published in an organized way. So the old dashboard that you may or may not remember, but if you were in the old Ignition dashboard, there are a lot of tiles and rows and scrolling to be done to look at all the content. Now you're going to get a much more simplified list. It's very easy to find things in that way. Yeah, much, much cleaner. Yeah, much cleaner. I've built an index page up there that will be similar to the dashboard, but more of just here's a longer list of all the content in a particular category. The dashboard is designed so that we can highlight to you some of the new stuff we put out there. You know, for example, Drew, Phil Gravasi's got intent-based networking white papers that are up there now that we've put in a featured section of the dashboard. So you know very quickly if you log in as a member and look, there's some new content there that I want to click through and get. Yeah, so we've really, really making an effort to simplify much of the interface, make it easier to find things. And now that you know it's all premium anyway, what you're getting on Ignition, then, that's pretty straightforward.
Yeah, there's no confusion about having to surf around the site. Is this free? Is this for pay? How do I get it? It's just very straightforward. If you've signed up, if you've paid the $99, everything there is yours.
That's right, exactly. And the only caveat I got to throw out there is we use this. If you guys, any of you guys listening are WordPress nerds, we're using a plugin called Restrict Content Pro that allows us to designate that this is something you have to be logged in to get access to. If we check the box wrong, it's possible you'll be logged in as a premium user and it'll say, you can't get to this. You know, that's not because we're lying to you. It's because we screwed up in a checkbox somewhere. Any of you that have worked with Restrict Content Pro, it's very powerful, but also very confusing sometimes how the permissions work. So we've done our best to keep it simple on the back end, but we're meat bots and we screw up sometimes. No.
Anyway. With great power comes a great number of checkboxes that you have to pay attention to.
So many checkboxes with Restrict Content Pro. Absolutely. Yeah.
So the other thing I want to talk about is we keep talking about content, and that's just sort of a general word bucket to throw a bunch of things in. So let's sort of break that down a little bit more. What you're going to find in Ignition is things like white papers, the white papers by Phil Gervasi on intent-based networking you just mentioned. There's going to be ebooks. Greg wrote an ebook on how to build your career. That'll be available for premium members. There's going to be articles. Greg's going to be doing some analysis posts, and Ethan and I will also be contributing to exclusive articles just for Ignition. And then there's courses. And I sort of think this is the lodestone or the capstone of really what Ignition is all about.
Courses to me are something that I personally have been passionate about wanting to deliver on either past knowledge that I've gleaned as being a network engineer for the better part of 20 years, and also the ability to introduce new concepts, bleeding edge things in a structured way where since it's a course, it is broken out into lessons where you don't have to sit and try to absorb something in a book format or
as a podcast.
Yeah, where it's a very lengthy sitting. You can just consume a lesson over lunch. It's not going to be any longer than, you know, 15 or 20 minutes. You know, on the whole, most of them are quite a bit shorter than that. You know, watch a video, take some notes. Each lesson builds, and then at the end of the course, you walk away having gathered, if you've paid good attention and taken good notes, you know, a good bit of knowledge on a given topic. So, you know, for example, I have finally published a QoS course. It's 18 lessons. It's fundamentals. It takes you from what QoS can do and can't do into some RFC specifics about different per-hop behaviors and why you'd want to use certain marking schemes, and teaches you about shaping and policing, and talks about class-based weighted fair queuing and low latency queuing, and, you know, and so on. And I'm shooting even additional footage to add to those core 18 lessons, you know, in kind of a different format, you know, that we're calling the lawn chair sessions, just to, you know, give you some more insight into QoS and how you'd use it. And you're like, okay, so this means I can go get a certification, right? Is that what the courses are all about? And no, that's right. It isn't. And let me explain why. There's a million sites out there you can, maybe not a million, maybe it's 2 million. I don't know. There's a lot of sites out there you can go to for certification specific training. But what at Packet Pushers we're wanting to deliver here isn't, this information may well help you on a certification journey, but that's not what we're targeting as much as we're targeting design and implementation of a specific technology. What is this technology? What's it good for? How would you actually use it in the real world? So that rather than memorizing a bunch of terms and lists of things that you can regurgitate on a multiple choice exam at some testing center, you can actually learn the technology from a perspective of, this is what I could do with this. If I was to use this technology in my environment, this is what it's good for. These are the kind of problems that it solves for me. So it's as much a way of thinking and applying a technology to your network as it is the bits and bytes and the nerd knobs and so on, because of course those things are in there too. And to me, this is the kind of thing that fills a gap that certification training tends to have, where it's so focused on getting you to that point where you can pass the exams which are notoriously difficult to get through because they're so trivia oriented, and get you more in that practical way of adding that tool to your tool belt, adding that technology to your tool belt, that so you could apply it in the real world and understand how it fits and doesn't fit. So if you were to look at my QoS Fundamentals course, that's the approach I really take.
Yeah, I like to think of it as that sort of base layer of knowledge, understanding core concepts, having an understanding of why. Why is there QoS? What is it doing? As opposed to how do I configure XYZ on, you know, vendor X's device?
So courses will be, again, I think a major feature, the biggest thing, the most interesting thing that we'll be delivering on Ignition over time. But as we said, Drew, not the only thing. But we do have more courses that are coming. I'll just talk through a couple that I'm talking about. We're talking to a few other people too that could develop some course content for us. But I'm looking at a course on TCP. You mean TCP/IP? I mean TCP specifically as a transport layer of IP. And the reason is I'm finding a lot of folks that are in the situation of designing applications in cloud or multi-cloud don't have a great understanding of TCP and how it works, and maybe don't understand a lot of the new variants of TCP that have come along and why. And so I feel like it would be helpful to have a course that talks about things like acknowledgments and sequence numbers, sliding windows and how they actually work and what they do and what that algorithm's like, the key elements of round trip time and latency between two endpoints when they're talking and how that impacts TCP flows, what a long fat network is, which is some of you are like, oh, I know what an LFN is, and you probably also know what BDP is, a bandwidth delay product and so on, and you've done that math, but maybe you haven't. We'll talk through that in a course like this. How you optimize TCP, what multipath TCP is, and then the modern variants of TCP that introduce congestion control into their computation algorithms, like Qubik and Google's BBR and Reno, and there's a ton of them, and well, I'll pick a few of them so you kind of get the sense of what they're good for. And the idea there is you get really familiar with how TCP behaves over a variety of latencies and over a variety of operating systems implementing different flavors of TCP. And it becomes this fundamental bit of knowledge that impacts everything about your network design. It becomes very important to you to have that knowledge percolating in the back of your head.
Yes.
Advanced QoS is another one that I'm looking at because we did QoS fundamentals in 18 lessons and, you know, with even more content I'm going to put into that set. But then the stuff I didn't get into, like control plane policing and how a crossbar fabric works within a switch and what a virtual output queue is and how the ISLIP algorithm works and the ECN bits in the toss byte and RSVP and an AQM and more acronyms we could throw at you there. and again, things that all tend to matter as you're doing network design, you know, bleeding edge stuff. I'm looking at segment routing. It seems to be coming like maybe it's the way to do service chaining. Maybe it's the way to do traffic engineering now, or it's going to be the way. And so I've been digging into that and researching it, and maybe I'll build a course around that kind of thing. And Drew, I know we've got other content being planned for Ignition too.
Yeah, that's right. So we mentioned the IBM white paper series. We're hoping to round that out with a third white paper to be determined. SD-WAN has been very popular, and I think there's some content we could deliver there. We've already got on the site a survey that we did of our audience, an SD-WAN survey, so folks can get a sense of what their peers are up to and thinking about doing an EVPN white paper series, drilling into, one, the fundamentals and then more technical detail around EVPN. So we're going to be continually producing more white papers as we continue to grow the site. Oh, this sort of ties back to one of the lessons that we learned as we rolled out Ignition, in that producing content is hard, and we're already producing a lot for packet pushers. So having to fill a second hole, we were kind of like, maybe we bit off a little bit more than we can chew. And these courses that you're talking about, I just want to let folks know, this is video. So it's you talking to a camera, it's on film. You've got ways to show some diagrams and stuff. You can do a little bit of CLI work. So these are intense. it's a lot of work to get one of these courses out. So we launched Ignition assuming we would fill the pipe more quickly than we did. It's taken us a little more time, but that's why we're hoping by going all premium, folks will see the value of what we're doing and what we plan to do and sort of take a flyer on it.
Yeah, absolutely. What made the QoS video possible is I have someone working with me now as my videographer, who's able to actually set up cameras, shoot video, compile it all, edit it, as if it was up to me, because I started on it like late last fall. I got two lessons in, and that's as far as I got. That was it. So it was all up to me. With that videographer involved in my life, that means I have the opportunity to actually record stuff, because as you say, Drew, it is hard enough to actually do all the research I need to do to make sure my facts are hopefully all correct, and then generate the lessons and the kind of the talking points that need to be delivered, let alone standing up in front of cameras and shooting and, you know, and all the rest. So there is indeed quite a lot to producing one of these things, and they're very time consuming. And we have a very full schedule at Packet Pushers with all the shows we're already producing. To add more is sort of a big deal. We need a nice smooth workflow to make it happen.
Yes, which brings me to another topic, in that we don't want Ignition to just be the packet pushers. So if you've got an idea, if you've got a course you always wanted to create, if you're interested in writing white papers or technical articles or an ebook, reach out to us. We are paying for content on Ignition. So we would love to get folks on board. As I mentioned, Phil Gervasi has written a couple of white papers. We've paid him for it. We're talking to some folks about maybe putting together some course materials. So just like the Packet Pushers podcast has expanded with folks outside of the Packet Pushers, Ned Bellavance doing Day 2 Cloud, you partnering with Chris Wall on Datanauts, Full Stack Journey with Scott Lowe. We want to do the same for Ignition, that it's not just the Packet Pushers voices. We're looking for content. We've got a lot of pipeline to fill. So if you're interested in writing, producing, shooting something, let us know. We are paying for work.
Yeah, exactly. We are paying. Take our money. Come on, take it, please.
Yes, we could use some help.
And we'll make it as easy for you as possible to produce content. You know, we understand how it's done, and if you've never done it before, we'll make it as easy on you as possible to get that done. And you will get a reasonable amount of money for the effort that you put into it. So please reach out to us and and let us know. Packetpushers@gmail.com would be a good way to do that. And of course, we're on Twitter and LinkedIn. We check those messages pretty regularly.
Or if you want to hit me at drew@packetpushers.net, would love to hear pitches.
Yeah, you pitch us your ideas. If it's interesting to you, it's probably interesting to someone else. And of course, topics like automation are hot. So especially if you've been getting into that sort of thing with Ansible and Python or Nornier, or fill in the blanks about 100 different tools you might be using. Yeah, let's have that conversation and see if there's some material that's worth building for your premium peers over on ignition.packetpushers.net.
And if you're not interested in creating content, but there's information that you'd like, whether it's a fundamentals course or getting some information on something more bleeding edge, let us know. We're also going out to folks that we know and trust and requisitioning content from them. So if you've got ideas, we're happy to hear that too, what the audience would like to know about.
Yeah, the more we hear from you, the better the site will be. And we have a pipeline of content going now, so hopefully we can keep it filled and keep new stuff up in front of you.
All right, so we mentioned we're just sharing a little bit of information about this QoS course that Ethan has been working on and is now ready to launch. So I guess let's talk about that a little bit, Ethan. My first question is, why QoS, and is QoS even really an issue anymore? Why does it matter?
Why did you actually bother creating this course, Banks? What's your problem? Does
Shouldn't
QoS
you have
even
asked
matter?
Us before you did this?
So does QoS really matter? And the answer is, of course, the classic answer, it depends. Where QoS matters the most is where you have congestion points on your network. That is, you've got some link on your network that from time to time becomes full, and packets begin buffering while that congested interface is trying to deliver traffic that has backed up because it can only deliver so fast. It's got its limitations. QoS, the most critical thing that it's going to accomplish for you is making sure that the packets that are backing up waiting to be delivered, the most important ones are delivered first. If I could put it in a nutshell, that's it. And for a lot of the folks that are listening to this podcast, they're enterprise network engineers. They also are running voice over IP across their network. There's hard phones and soft phones that are packetizing all of the calls between two endpoints. Two people are talking, two humans across that network, and the call quality needs to be pristine. And so when you have a congested interface and voice packets are backing up in the buffer or, God forbid, being dropped, that impacts call quality directly, and people get really upset about that. And if the wrong person gets upset, it's no longer going to be a minor annoying thing you get as a help desk ticket. It's the CEO just said his call quality sucked and he's pissed because he couldn't hear thus and so, and he wants it fixed now. Okay, well then maybe you have a QoS solution to that problem. Not the only way to fix that, but those are scenarios in which QoS matters. There's other places. We could talk about the data center, QoS and storage traffic. We could talk about the end of the month, and the financial system has got to be prioritized over anything else, especially streaming YouTube videos, and QoS can help you with that scenario. So does it matter? I mean, I guess
my cat videos are a productivity tool, so I just want to make sure they get the right markings.
We will mark your cat videos as a scavenger class. Are cat scavengers? No, they're not scavengers. Anyway, so the answer, I guess, Drew, is does QoS really matter? Is it still a thing? Yeah, it can. It can matter. And depending on the application mix on your network, it can actually solve a number of problems for you.
So let me channel my inner Greg and just say, just put more bandwidth on and the problem solved.
Well, honestly, and I actually open up the course talking about just how true that statement is. If you paint with a really broad brush and say, more bandwidth is always better, and that's the answer, and QoS is stupid because more bandwidth. Well, there is a grain of truth in that, because at the core of why you need QoS, what you're dealing with is making the best of a bad situation. If you add bandwidth, then in theory, you don't have a congestion point anymore because, yay, the speed limit's faster, essentially. You can put more packets through that line. So where it may have been congested at one time, more bandwidth means you can shove more through. No congestion, no need for QoS. Woohoo! And more bandwidth is better. Yeah, it really is. If you can do that, but the real world is you can't always solve the problem with more bandwidth. We're constrained by budget. Wide area networks, Drew, the WAN links tend to be a lot smaller than our LAN links, mm-hmm. and so we've got at minimum gigabit going across our LAN, probably 10 gig or more through major parts of it. And then we show up at the WAN interface, and it's probably a gigabit or less, substantially mm-hmm. less. And so now you've got this stair step down to a much lower amount of bandwidth, and companies can't afford to just infinitely increase bandwidth.
Yeah, and there may be issues in whatever geographical region you're in terms of getting more bandwidth.
Oh, gosh, especially in a lot of places, but especially in North America, where a lot of rural communities are still dealing with 2 and 4 wire sorts of circuits. You can't even mm-hmm. get Ethernet handoffs everywhere. You can in mm-hmm. most places. That's increasing. And you can get pretty good broadband circuits over cable DOCSIS networks. But there's still problems where you're still faced with teeny tiny little circuits that are just, you're lucky if you're getting, 25 megabits per second, let alone 100 or 500 or a gig. And right, how do you deal with that situation? QoS can help you with that. Where bandwidth can't fix it, QoS maybe can help.
So if I'm going to continue to play devil's advocate, we talk a lot about SD-WAN, and it's getting a lot of uptake in the market. And one of the major drivers is, one, I'm maximizing my bandwidth by having 2 available or more circuits that I can use simultaneously as opposed to just wasting one on failover. And 2, I can mark by application or flow what gets priority. So if I'm in an SD-WAN situation, again, I'm coming back to, do I need QoS? Or am I essentially getting it just in a different way?
Yeah, I think the latter. I think you're essentially getting it, but in a different sort of a way. Tom Hollingsworth has a really great post on this on his Networking Nerd blog site, where he talks about this in some detail, and I think he's right on point. Does SD-WAN eliminate the need for QoS? If you've put in SD-WAN pervasively, where your SD-WAN or where your wide area network is no longer simply private links that disappear into a carrier cloud and pop out the other side. Now it's this overlay that you're managing with at least 2 circuits, maybe even 3 circuits, and SD-WAN has got way more intelligence about which application to put across which link. All the links are being used. It's taking real-time quality measurements across that link. And it knows, it's based on policy that you've defined, which link should be used for a particular kind of traffic. Mm-hmm. Do you need QoS in that scheme? Well, effectively, if you've written your policies well and the SD-WAN solution is capable enough, not all of them have the same capabilities, right? Then you've got a solution that will accomplish the same thing in the end of packets being delivered to their destinations in a timely fashion. And the critical stuff not being dropped and stuff that doesn't matter so much maybe being dropped if it can tolerate it. Does it eliminate the need for QoS? Now, another point here is a lot of the SD-WAN solutions understand DSCP marks and can you can build policy around that within the SD-WAN policy engine. It knows that, this traffic of this class is as defined by this mark, I'm supposed to treat in this way. But you're not using the same class-based weighted fair queuing or low latency queuing. You're not building out those sorts of policies like you would on a router or a switch, or you would have back in the day. So what I have heard of some people doing is, they'll say, I'm not going to bother with QoS anymore. The only place I have problems is on the WAN. Software-defined WAN, my SD-WAN solution can take care of this for me in its own magical way. I'm just going to write me some great policies, and I'm done with QoS at that point. It's a solution that I'll say probably won't solve all of your problems, but it might solve 90% of them. And so is it good enough? Might be good enough. Might be good enough, yeah.
So are there cases where I may be using SD-WAN, but also still having to implement QoS on a particular network or segment of a network?
Yeah, because SD-WAN does not, SD-WAN is aimed at WAN, wide area network specifically. So there definitely could be other places in your network where you're facing congestion. You own all the links. You're not running an SD-WAN overlay over the top. There's no extra intelligence for you to be able to take advantage of there. And you got to program the intelligence yourself. using some sort of QoS policy. So it's definitely possible there. And it could be, you know, if nothing else, maybe you just want to mark traffic throughout your network and keep a marking scheme. And even if you're not writing a queuing scheme anywhere, you may still wish to do that. I can come up with a lot of scenarios where that would be useful, even though marking only populates the TOSPA. It doesn't really do anything other than create a mark. It can be helpful in other places in your network where you would do that. So I can see some scenarios where you might still use QoS even though you have SD-WAN involved. And again, there's no one-size-fits-all for sure.
It depends. So you mentioned voice over IP. That's an obvious use case for QoS, and I presume video is the same. Are there others besides that kind of real-time traffic?
Yeah, video. Well, just to speak to video for a second, it's actually similar. If it is stream, if it is real time video, yeah, you kind of have the same thing. But there's also streaming video, which tends to be buffered, and so you don't have to treat it in quite the same way, for what it's worth. But yeah, any of those real time communications protocols like that are key for voice. You know, key use cases for QoS, right? Another major use case here is the problem of elephant flows and mice flows. So an elephant flow is a long-lived flow that'll take up as much bandwidth as it can find. Backups are a classic case of this. Synchronization technologies that like database sync or file system syncs, they tend to be like this as well. Lots and lots and lots of data needing to flow between these two points, and they're going to scream as loud as they can. In other words, fill the pipe, use as much bandwidth as possible. Versus a mice flow or a mouse flow, a mouse flow is something that tends to be not a lot of data and it's pretty short lived. Well, an elephant flow will clog a pipe and not really leave any room for in the buffer or anywhere for the mouse flows. So QoS can help with this situation in a few different ways. One, you might choose to shape or police elephant flow so that they don't have the ability to fill the choke points in the network with their data. You leave some headroom in the circuits between the two elephant flow endpoints so that there's some space left for them, the mice flows, to have somewhere to go. That's a technique that can be used. You could also use it in a different way to help avoid mice flows from being tail dropped, and that is with weighted random early detection, where you are proactively dropping packets in the buffer to prevent the buffer from being full. More packets can then have somewhere to go when they arrive at the congested interface. They've got somewhere to stay in the buffer rather than the buffer being completely full. Sorry, no room for you, and the router's got no choice but to drop those packets. Random early detection will leave some spaces open and can be configured in such a way, if you've done your marking and your QoS policies right, where it'll somewhat aggressively drop elephant flow packets from the buffer to leave holes for all those other flows that are flowing in to that congested interface. There's another use case there. Another is for essentially deprioritizing certain kinds of traffic. So a major thing that you're going to do with QoS when you design it from the ground up is identify traffic classes. That is, you're going to say, I've got these three or four or maybe even eight different traffic classes. Some of those traffic classes are going to be things you don't care about, like best effort traffic or scavenger class traffic. Things that are like, hey, if there's any room left for you, great. Other than that, everyone else is going before you. You're getting thrown away is probably what's happening.
Cat videos.
Your cat videos are probably, unfortunately, going to get dropped on the ground. But that makes sense, though, right? Because we know that most networks these days are abused in a sense. Maybe it is corporately permissible to stream Spotify and to watch cat videos and these kind of things that can hog a lot of bandwidth. Maybe that is corporately allowed, but when it's end of month and the accounting system's absolutely got to be prioritized and all transactions must get through, then you want the ability to have this less important traffic be classified as such so that it gets thrown away and other traffic be prioritized. There's a use case there. We'll be back to this podcast shortly, but we're going to talk about ExtraHop, a packet pusher sponsor, first. Your job probably includes managing applications, network infrastructure, and so on. But how do you do that when you can't even see everything those apps are running on, when half the network the app is running across isn't even yours? Add to that SDN changing things in automated ways that maybe feel out of your control, or devs and other business units firing up their own cloud instances and then expecting you to support it even though you've got zero instrumentation. These scenarios are some of the ways that ExtraHop can help. ExtraHop is a leader in network analytics, and they help you consolidate tools into their analytics platform and make sense of application performance running over infrastructure that's sprawled beyond your data center and across the internet and then into the cloud. ExtraHop offers complete visibility and leverages machine learning to help you make sense of the mountain of metadata about your network, and in the end, you can make informed decisions about your IT stack and do it quickly. If you go to extrahop.com/packetpushers, you can find out more about the ExtraHop Performance Platform. Once more, that is extrahop.com/packetpushers. And now, back to the show.
So let me put you on the spot and ask, how fine-grained can I get with my categories? Because my understanding is QoS is primarily dealing with packets, not necessarily flows, and not even necessarily having a lot of application awareness. So yes, I can say, you know, UDP, okay, presumably that's video, so that should get a higher marking than something else. But how do I distinguish between, say, a YouTube video and a, you know, a live stream broadcast that has to go out to everybody in the organization, like a big company update?
Yeah, there's a few ways. And the way it's done is with marking different flows in different ways. So there is actually a more fine-grained intelligence to it. So if you've got a video, as you were describing, that is originated from Corp, and you're distributing it, you know, through the system, and you know the point of origin of that video, you can say that video coming from this source, some IP address and a port combination, gets marked as X, and it's important. It would be typically something like that would be handled by your UC system, where you actually know the point of origin, you know the servers that are involved in that system. You actually know and can identify in detail what the source of that important video was and can distinguish it from other, from the cat videos, right? So another point here to make is that routers have the ability, you know, even within the Cisco world, of at doing application-based recognition. It's called NBAR, Network-Based Application Recognition. There's been multiple generations of that technology over the years where you can get into layer 7 and not just say, oh, it's TCP or it's UDP or it's this IP address. It's actually this URL or it's this kind of an application that the NBAR engine actually understands what that traffic is and gives you the ability to classify it and mark it in a particular way. Now, you had asked, you know, a little earlier about just how fine-grained can you get. So what most organizations are going to do is they're going to build a classification system that generates between 4 and 8 classes of traffic. The more classes you generate, you decide are important for your organization, the more technical debt you're creating. So you do want to keep it as simple as possible. Mm-hmm. And then you mark the traffic so that rather than dealing with individual flows, you're actually dealing with groups of flows that have all been marked with a particular mark, and then making decisions about it as it gets, as that marked traffic is passing through congested interfaces with QoS policies applied based on the mark, as opposed to the application or, you know, whatever else it might be. It's been marked in a certain way. That mark is the decision point that the router revolves around. So getting the mark right as that traffic enters the network ends up being the key use case. And again, you're typically going to have between 4 and 8 marks or traffic classes that you're going to use and build your QoS policies around.
And is that mark going to be based on some combination of like IP address, port, and protocol?
It could be exactly that, yep. It could be that it is a phone that is plugged into your switch and it marks the traffic itself and you just trust the mark that it gives you and accept it as it flows into the network, which is a perfectly legit thing if it's like a Cisco phone talking to a Cisco switch. You can tell the Cisco switch, hey, that if as long as this thing identifies itself as a Cisco phone, trust the marks that it gives you and it'll mark all of the traffic flowing in and out of it appropriately. You know, that's a good way.
So if my Cisco phone has a video screen, I'm going to watch my cat videos on that. I'm defeating the system here.
I see what you did there. You're a bad person. You're a very bad person. it's not a foolproof system, to be honest.
Of course, you know, Drew, of course.
But getting traffic marked is a tricky thing that you need to spend a lot of time with. You will use IP addresses. You will use port numbers. Maybe in some cases you're going to use DNS names. You know, you can identify this traffic flowing into your network in that way. But it is key to get those marks correct, to mark that traffic as best as possible as it enters the network. And then, now that it's marked, as that marked packet flows through your network, you're making your QoS forwarding decisions based on that mark.
So all these elements we've discussed, presumably that's kind of the meat of what we're going to get in this QoS course. Is that right?
Yeah, I go into this in a lot of detail. The video that I recorded so far is about 3 hours long. I've got another 40 minutes of video to add to it, kind of, it was adjunct stuff. And I'm the last thing I have to work on is actually a case study where I'm going to create an imaginary company and have you, dear course consumer, design a QoS scheme for them. And then I'll give you an answer key at the end. I haven't done that last bit yet, but that is coming, you know, very soon. I go into a lot of detail on this. Like, I don't talk about marks, you know, generically. I get real specific into all the bits and bytes, the number of schemes that are typically seen in the real world, like assured forwarding and expedited forwarding and class selector, what that all means. I give you a little bit of history. I even talk about how to convert binary to decimal and decimal to binary, which is kind of helpful when you're designing QoS schemes a little bit. We talk about, once you've marked this traffic and you've got the different traffic classes, how do you manage that traffic in different ways? And so all the different tools that you can use to handle that marked traffic as it flows through your environment. You know, we also answer some questions, you know, kind of like some of the things you fired at me here, Drew. You know, we talk about some of those in even more detail.
And the notion, again, you just mentioned 3 hours. This is not one big 3-hour brain dump. This is broken up into more digestible chunks, and they build one on the other.
At the moment, it's 18 lessons, and they are organized to build one on top of the other. They stand alone, you know, as a lesson, but they're intended to be watched in order. They are all built as a course where you can watch them consecutively. Some lessons are as short as about 2 minutes. Some are as long. I don't think I get into anything longer than about 20 to talk through stuff. Most of them are in the 5 to 10 minute range.
Okay. Yeah, that's digestible. And like you said, over lunch or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, over lunch. Or if you just want to mainline the thing, just sit there and go lesson after lesson. But take notes. You know, you can do it. You can cram it all into your head. It is intended. I mean, the way I shot them was in chunks where I'd shoot several lessons at a time, one on top of the other. And you know, you'll see that, you know, line of, you know, train of thought there should be evident as you're watching.
I'm thinking of Clockwork Orange in that scene where they've got the guy's eyebrows, eyelids peeled back and applying drops while Beethoven the Fifth plays. And I'm getting all the QoS.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, maybe not do that, but whatever floats your boat. Okay, so that's the sneak preview for the QoS course and for the Ignition relaunch. If you're interested, it's ignition.packetpushers.net. Again, we're moving to all paid subscriber level. $99 for a year gets you access to everything we talked about, including this QoS course and more to come. Just a reminder, if you're interested in creating courses, whether it's a video course, whether it's a white paper, an ebook, or an article, something, let us know. We are looking for content creators, and we do pay. So reach out and let us know. We'd love to get other folks on the platform. Ethan, anything else we should do? Oh, Human Infrastructure Magazine, we're still going to produce it. If you've already signed up as a free member of Ignition, a reminder that's going away, but you'll still get your Human Infrastructure Magazine. You don't have to do anything else. It's still going to come just like it always did. Anything else we should remind folks of, Ethan?
Yeah, the big thing is we will be sending out some reminders as we make these minor changes to Ignition. They'll be minor to most of you. You know, if you're a free member, you don't have a premium subscription. Hey, we're going to remind you that your free membership is going away at some point soon. If you want to convert and become a premium member, you know, you'll see a few communications coming your way. And, you know, if we don't hear from you, no problem. We don't need to hear from you. We'll delete your account at some specified date and so on. Make everything nice and clean and tidy so you don't have some security concern about your, oh my gosh, I had this thing on Ignition that's still there and that's bad, right? No, we'll clean it all up. We will. Yeah. But we'll let you know before we do it.
That's right. And maybe in July of 2020, we'll circle back around again and see how this relaunch has gone.
Yes, yes.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah. Hey, Banks, you got any more content done? Can we talk about QoS some more? Hopefully I've done better than that.
Yes. All right. Well, this wraps up this episode. You can find the show notes at in your podcatcher. And if you visit packetpushers.net, you will discover over 1,000 episodes from across our podcast network for networking and infrastructure professionals, along with our community blog and news feeds. You can tweet at packetpushers, follow us on LinkedIn, rate us on Apple Podcasts, and become a premium member on our spiffy new ignition.packetpushers.net site. Last but not least, remember that too much QoS would never be enough.